Overtime, 106.7, the Fan, Toby Altizer with you for one final hour, then we'll turn it over to the legend, the DOC, Rick Doc Walker, taking you up until Nats baseball this evening. 7:15 first pitch for the Nats and the Braves, and it's a big one for the Nationals. Every game matters. Miles Michaelis takes the hill tonight for the Nationals. Reynaldo Lopez, former National, starts for the Braves. And big opportunity for the Nationals once again tonight, as every game matters. I mean, you look at the standings, like I just mentioned, just a couple games back, and you can't give away games. I thought it was interesting just talking to various people while we're out watching Commanders practice today, and you know, you're going through, and should they sell? Should they buy? I was asked by a couple of fans, like, hey, are they going to trade this guy? Are they going to trade that guy? And, you know, it's an interesting time for the Nationals, because I'm glad we're having these talks. Because the fact that there's even a decision to be made shows that this season has gone a lot better than any of us expected. If this team was where I thought they would be, there would be no decision to be made here for Paul Toboni. It'd be very easy to figure out that you would decide to move on and you would trade the assets that are worth anything and get something in return. And this team has put themselves in a position where they're legitimately fighting for a playoff spot. And even though the likelihood still isn't very high, in my opinion, that they get into the playoffs, I think if you look at the teams that they're fighting right now, Philadelphia is better than them, and they're likely to try to add at the deadline. The Diamondbacks, even though they just took two of three, I think just over the course of 162 and playing around the league, they're probably a better team. I would think that the Padres, even though they've really struggled to score runs this year, with as good as their bullpen is, and who knows, AJ Preller might try to add. You never know what Preller's going to do ahead of the deadline. So if they were to add, I don't doubt they're going to trade Mason Miller. So if they don't trade Mason Miller and they added a piece or two, I think the Padres are probably better. I think they're right in the same tier as the Pirates and the Marlins. But you're fighting with all those teams. But I also don't know that you're necessarily passing those teams. And like I laid out to end last segment, I think because of how this team is structured and their struggles at the pitching on the mound, they can't go on long win streaks. Just because of the fact that you could have a clunker almost half the time from your pitching staff. And even if you get a great performance from a starter, can the bullpen hold it? And the answer too many times this season, unfortunately, has been no. So I think that's going to be the interesting part here, and why I think this decision is so difficult for Paul Toboni. If I'm telling you that their likelihood of making the playoffs and they're probably not passing some of these teams isn't all that high, then conventional wisdom says anybody worth value on an expiring contract that you're not going to sign, or you've had discussions and they haven't gone anywhere, trade them. Foster Griffin falls immediately into that category. And yet I would tell you I probably wouldn't trade Foster. And that's where I think this situation is so unique for the Nationals. And I think, you know, they're one of the more interesting teams at this trade deadline. Maybe they don't hold the chips for the most highly coveted players, because I don't think CJ's getting traded. If you look at Jeff Passan and Kylie McDaniel's updated article on ESPN of the top 2026 trade deadline candidates, CJ Abrams is number three on the list, but Passan lists his chance of being traded at 20%. I'd argue that's even too high. Now, Passan's obviously more plugged in around the league than I am, but I just don't see any world in which they would get a package that would make CJ available. So I'm not even going to spend much time on that. I don't think they're going to trade CJ. But I think the interesting discussion is Foster Griffin and Luis Garcia. And I feel like we've talked about all the different angles on Foster Griffin, and yet I still think you could listen to everything that I've laid out for you over the last couple of days on Grant and Danny, that we've talked about, on Bustin' Loose Baseball, wherever you have listened to Nat's discussions about Foster Griffin, even if you've gotten it elsewhere. reading Barry's article, reading Andrew Golden's article, whatever it may be. And you could switch your opinion every other day. It could switch multiple times in one day. And so that's why I think it's such an interesting decision for Paul Toboni is I don't know if there is a definitive right answer. I really don't. This is a gray area type of decision because say you trade him. You probably don't win this year, but you frustrate some of the fan base and you kind of punt on this season. And okay, you get back prospects and maybe you also frustrate people in the clubhouse and you have to kind of work on bridging that gap and doing what's necessary there and making sure that people understand what you're doing and different things. And I think one thing that they do a fantastic job of as a front office and as a coaching staff this season for this baseball team is communication has been something that anybody you ask, player, staff member, coach, front office member, it's a priority and it's something that they feel is really, really good. And so I have no doubt that if Paul Toboni opted to trade Foster Griffin, that the discussion that he'll have with the guys in that clubhouse will be a positive one and they'll talk things through. That being said, when your boss or someone that is in charge comes and gives you some bad news, that communication may be great, doesn't necessarily mean that I still love it, right? In that clubhouse. I appreciate you being open and honest, but also could we have just continued to try to win? You know? So I think that's the interesting part about trying to weigh that in the clubhouse and make that decision. I also think if you're Paul Toboni and you decide, well, I'll just keep him, we'll go on a playoff run, it's a boost of confidence for the guys in that clubhouse. Because by the way, if they didn't say anything, and people know what's going on. Blake Butera mentioned as much postgame last night. Foster Griffin really struggled last night in his start in Atlanta. Was not typical Foster Griffin. Was not as dialed in as we generally see Foster Griffin be. I don't think if they decided not to trade anybody and the only move they made at the deadline, even if they didn't buy, if they just said, we'll do nothing, and our only move at the deadline is the Curtis Meade for Connolly Early trade, I don't think Paul Toboni, Blake Butera, Ani Colombi, anybody has to step in that clubhouse and say anything, and those guys wouldn't be fired up. It's like a boost of confidence, a little kick in the pants, a little bit of just a boost of adrenaline for that clubhouse of like, oh, we are trying. We are going to see what this season can do. It does ride on our shoulders. We could make the playoffs. I don't think Paul Toboni has to say anything. Those guys would be fired up because they've seen all the speculation. They know what's going on. They know what we're talking about. Even if they're not listening or reading, they know. And so it's a boost of confidence if he does not trade Foster Griffin that, hey, let's see what we can do here. Or even if it's something, too, that they were to get an extension done. Great, we're going to have this guy around for the next couple of seasons to go along with Connolly Early and Cade Cavalli. Awesome. So I think that's the interesting discussion, is you can make the argument either side. You know, if you decide to keep Foster Griffin and then he leaves and your ownership doesn't give you the green light to give the qualifying offer and he leaves for nothing, and the only thing that you gained was an extra 10, 11 starts out of Foster Griffin, well, hopefully it was worth it. But what if the prospect that you were offered, and maybe we would never know, but what if the prospect you were offered was somebody that could have been on your pitching staff next season on opening day or early on in the season? What if the prospect you were offered was someone that could have been a starting catcher or whatever it may be? I don't know. Take your pick of whatever you're looking for. But that's the interesting part, is Paul Toboni has to weigh it out. And I think because of where they're at right now and the way that this season has gone, the decision is going to be incredibly tough, but I wouldn't trade him. I just don't think that you should. I think when you throw out all the factors of the ways that they can still make sure that they get value out of Foster Griffin, I don't think you're going to get something worth more than what you could get through the qualifying offer or the impending comp pick that you would get if you were to leave, than what you're going to get in a trade package back. I want to break this down a little bit further in terms of what a trade package might look like and why, again, I prefer to hold on to him. Maybe there's a little bias in there, but I don't think that I'm alone in this. Andrew Golden acknowledged as much in his article, saying, yeah, the baseball brain in me says trade him, but I don't think that I would. So I think conventional wisdom tells you one thing, but not every situation has to be played the conventional way. Sometimes things are a little bit differently, and I think there's some reasons why I personally would not trade Foster Griffin. I want to dive a little bit deeper into that, but I want to give you guys a chance to weigh in as well. I'll lay out what a potential package could look like. Would you rather trade him? Would you rather hold on to him? What do you want to see the Nationals do, and what do you think they're going to do ahead of the deadline coming up on Monday at 6 o'clock? 800-636-1067 is the phone number if you'd like to chime in. Toby Altizer with you here on The Fan. Welcome back. Overtime, 106.7 The Fan. Toby Altizer taking you up until 3 o'clock, then we'll turn it over to Doc Walker. Taking your phone calls, if you'd like to call in and talk about the Washington Nationals, 800-636-1067. So real quick, I want to give an idea of what a Foster Griffin trade could look like and all the ways that it could play out and why I personally would hold on to him. So the comps that I've heard on a trade for Foster Griffin, a couple of them that I've heard, just going through, Merrill Kelly is someone that Kyle Williams mentioned with Grant and Danny a little bit earlier this week when I was filling in. He'd mentioned the trade for Merrill Kelly last season where he went from the Diamondbacks to the Rangers. And the D-backs got back three pitchers in the deal. They got back Cole Drake, who was the number 13 prospect, according to MLB Pipeline, from the Rangers. Their number 21 prospect, Mitch Bratt, and also David Hageman. And the interesting part about that trade is the Nationals just faced the Diamondbacks, and two of those three guys pitched against the Nationals. Mitch Bratt and Cole Drake both pitched in that series against the Nationals. So could Foster Griffin get you back pitchers that could potentially help you in your rotation as early as next year? Maybe. I also don't know that Cole Drake or Mitch Bratt or any of those guys are necessarily expected to be much more than back end of the rotation type of arms. They're not highly thought of prospects, aside from, you know, Cole Drake was their number 13 prospect. But again, I don't necessarily think that he's, you know, some frontline rotation starter or even, you know, a number three type starter. I think that's a back end guy, maybe ends up pitching out of the pen or something of that nature. Generally is where those sorts of things end up working out. But if you get that sort of a deal, would you do that for Foster Griffin? I would tend to think no. Again, the reason why, and I'll get into it in just a second, is the qualifying offer. And if that's on the table, then I probably wouldn't take this deal. I'd rather almost have one better prospect than three guys like this, although this team could use pitching. But I think they have some pitching depth that's just more, it's a little further away. Another example of a trade that I'd heard thrown around as a comp was Michael Soroka last year getting traded from the Nats to the Cubs. The return that Soroka brought for the Nationals was Ronnie Cruz, who's the number 14 prospect for the Cubs at the time. He's actually a really good prospect now for the Nationals. They've kind of unearthed some things with him. And then Christian Franklin was their 25th-ranked prospect. I don't know that I'm doing that deal. Now, I think Foster Griffin would get a little bit more than what Soroka got, because I think Foster Griffin, in terms of his pitching ability this season, has been much better than what Soroka was last season for the team. But those are two deals right there where you're not even getting a team's a top 10 prospect from a team. I don't think I can do it if I'm Paul Toboni and trading away Foster Griffin if I'm not going to get a team's top 10 prospect. I would hope that you could maybe even get inside the top 8. If you're getting their fifth-ranked prospect, maybe you just go ahead and trade him. But here's why I wouldn't do it. Because if those are the types of deals that you're getting, which maybe you get a better one, I don't know. It's kind of tough to predict this one. That's why this discussion is so difficult, is I don't know what he's getting offered. I don't know what the Nationals are getting offered for Foster Griffin. But you can let it play out, and at worst, you give Foster Griffin the qualifying offer. Now, ownership has to give Paul Tabone the green light for this, but essentially what happens is he becomes a restricted free agent of sorts, where they'll give him the qualifying offer, which is about $22 million for next season. He can either accept or decline it. I would think that he's going to decline that and then hit free agency. And then you would get a comp pick, I believe after the second round is what Grant has been saying from conversations that he's had, is where you would get that pick. And if I get a pick in that range, and Paul Tabone just took a guy, Luke Williams, in the third round this season, so probably similar type of range, I probably would rather have that kind of a prospect and be able to make my choice on it than and enjoy a full season of Foster Griffin than moving him for three mediocre prospects at best. That's kind of where I'm at. So I wouldn't trade him. But you have to assume that the qualifying offer is on the table for that to be the case as well. 800-636-1067. Want to get your guys' thoughts. What should the Nationals do ahead of Monday's trade deadline? Let's get out to Jim in Silver Spring. Jim, what's going on? Jim, you there? All right, we'll see if we can get the phones back in just a second. Again, 800-636-1067 if you'd like to chime in. The other interesting name here is Luis Garcia Jr., and he's having a career year. He's been spectacular. And I think there is a world in which you could trade him and it not, I don't know, how do you phrase this? Because you can't trade your third and fourth best hitters with Luis Garcia and Curtis Meade and not feel it. There's no way you can do that. There's no team around Major League Baseball that could trade your third and fourth best hitter and not feel that. So I don't want to pretend like that's the case. But there is a world in which you could trade Luis Garcia, and if you get the right package back, you could be around the same level of a team and slightly better as a pitching staff and worse as a hitting staff lineup, but still feel like you're going to be competitive this season. So if you were able to trade Luis Garcia and you got back a reliever with some control and maybe a prospect, and then you brought up Abby Ortiz to take his spot, I would think that reliever with Abby Ortiz could give you pretty close to equal value to what Louis's giving you. Now, Louis is going to be the better hitter. I'm not saying Abby Ortiz is necessarily going to come up and have an 874 OPS. You're going to take a significant drop there. I really like Abby Ortiz as a prospect. I think he's going to be a helpful big leaguer for this team for a while, just in terms of what he can give you as a bat. I liked what I saw when he came up for the one game. Again, it's one game, but I liked what I saw from him in his quality of ABs. He's got an 844 OPS currently in AAA Rochester. Last season, among two teams in AA and AAA for the Rangers, he had an 835 OPS. So say he comes up and gives you, let's just go on the low side, and assuming he's not going to be awful, 700 OPS, you're still taking a significant drop there. So you can't act as if you're not. That if he had a 700 OPS for taking over for Luis Garcia, that's almost a 200-point drop. That's a 174-point drop. So you can't act like you wouldn't feel that. But if you got a reliever that you could now trust in the eighth inning or ninth inning, I think that's a major difference. And I think a lot of Nats fans would probably sign up for that. Sign up for the idea that, all right, I get a reliable arm to go alongside a player that I feel like can immediately step in. Like that's part of the thing that made the Curtis Meade trade make sense for me. One, you need pitching. But two, I trade Curtis Meade and I immediately plug in Brady House. I could trade Luis Garcia, I immediately plug in Abby Ortiz. Like, I've got some guys in those positions where, too, I also don't think Luis Garcia Jr. is a major part of their long-term plans, and I could be wrong there. I haven't had conversations or anything in that realm. Like, I have no idea. It's just me guessing. But he's under contract for, or he's under control for this year and then next. I don't know that you're signing him to any long-term deal. So if that's the case, you could trade him in the offseason. You could trade him at the next trade deadline. It's not to say that I don't like what Louis's been able to do, but the highest value he's going to have with the rest of control that he has is going to be at this deadline. You have guys that could step in immediately, and he's different from guys like CJ Abrams or James Wood or even Dylan Cruz. Those guys are here for at least a couple more seasons. CJ's here for two more years after this. So I don't even know. Part of the reason why I wouldn't trade CJ at this deadline, one, I think it'd be a major, major problem in the clubhouse in terms of the way guys would feel about that. But two, I also think that if you held on to him, the value you're going to get in the offseason isn't all that different from what you're going to get right now. So I don't see a reason why you have to be hasty and say, oh, we got to get that guy out of town. Let's see what kind of a run we can go on, and then we'll make a decision in the offseason. But to me, if I had to make the decision, and I'm curious to get your guys' thoughts, 800-636-1067, what would you do? If I had to make the decision for Paul Toboni, I was in his chair, I would trade Luis Garcia with the idea that I'm going to get back a reliever and a prospect, and I would hold on to Foster Griffin and give him the qualifying offer, and let's just give this thing a ride and see what happens. What would you do? 800-636-1067. We'll get back out to the phones next. You're listening to Overtime on The Fan. And The Fan, Toby Altizer with you for another half hour, then we'll turn it over to Doc Walker. So I wanted to point this out real quick, and then we'll get to your phone calls at 800-636-1067. A trade was just made in Major League Baseball, according to multiple reports, and Camilo Doval, right-handed reliever for the Yankees, is going to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is going to give up two prospects, Omar Alfonso and Luis Cruz. Just taking a look where those guys rank in the system for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Neither one of them is like a big-time prospect, but Alfonso's a catching prospect who's number 17 in their system. Luis Cruz is not inside their top 30, from what I'm seeing, according to MLB Pipeline. So that's something that's interesting. Doval hasn't been great this season. He's pitched to about a 4.5 ERA. He's got electric stuff, but hasn't been all that great. But he's got another year of arbitration. That's not a big-time prospect to go get a reliever that would immediately step in and probably be the Nationals' best reliever. The Nationals could pull off the buy-and-sell thing that Paul Toboni has talked about, where they could sell off either Luis Garcia, or they could sell off both him and Foster Griffin, or just Foster Griffin, and still trade away a prospect or two that maybe don't impact the long-term future of this organization because they're blocked or whatever it may be, or even just a lower-down prospect that, frankly, isn't a big part of the plan of the future of this team, and get in a reliever that's controllable for at least another season or two. So that's an interesting trade that I think can inform some of what Paul Toboni is going to be doing ahead of this deadline. 800-636-1067. Let's get out to Jim in Silver Spring. Let's try this again. Jim, what's going on?
Yeah, hopefully it works this time. I just want to say real quick, I bring a kind of a different perspective. I went to about 20 games a year from 2005 to 2019. 3 years ago, I stopped going altogether for reasons you couldn't imagine.
Yeah,
I think it's how you look at this team is important. If you look at this team and you see a team that isn't really realistically a playoff contender, isn't really even realistically a 500 team, when you have the worst starting pitching and the worst relief pitching in baseball, then you're not really realistically a 500 team. And I think that's the case. What we've been able to do this year is for 110 games, we got to really enjoy seeing a team that was good for the first time in 6 years. But now it's important to be realistic about this team. And I think that, for example, when you say we're first in runs scored, well, that's fine. It's because you had unbelievable numbers coming from Abrams, from Wood, to some extent Garcia, and to some extent Meade, who's gone. I don't think you can let Garcia go because there's not that much protection left in the lineup for Abrams and Woods. You got guys that are still – we don't know yet if Dylan Cruz can hit at the major league level. We don't know that Brady House can. They're both high former number one picks. I think it's a great idea to play them every day because you need to know what they are. frankly, Dayton Lyle's hitting 50 points less than he did a year ago. It's important to play him every day so you know what he's doing. But this is still a team that has guys on the roster like Jose Tena, Vivas, who, I mean, Kevin Verhinsten, who's a huge homer, even he dissed Vivas on the air the other night. And Shaparo. I mean, these are not bench pieces on a contending team. So I love this team, but I think Toboni and all of them are doing a good job. I don't have a problem with like a guy like Ortiz or Yo-Yo Morales, those guys coming up. We already know what Vivas and Tena and Shaparo are. Let those guys, you know, DFA those guys, bring up some young guys. And so let's start being realistic about what we have as a team. The other thing about young pitching is, and you know this because you follow the team, a couple of years ago, everybody's going crazy over Travis Sequeira and Harlene Susana. Now do we know if those guys will ever be healthy? With pitchers, you need to have a ton of them and hope you get lucky. And, of course, we lost a bad break there when we traded Jake Bennett. Look what he's doing now. So I would go ahead and move Griffin as he can get some young prospects. I keep Garcia just to keep this year interesting. Thanks.
Appreciate it, Jim. And I think he lays out what conventional wisdom tells you. Like, that is what the smart baseball mind would tell you. And so it's hard to counter that, honestly. It really is. Like, a lot of it is a feel and those sorts of things, and I don't know, you know, we're still learning Paul Toboni and how his front office operates. I don't know how much that stuff factors in when it's an analytical organization. Their model probably tells them to go ahead and move off Foster Griffin, and maybe they will. But I also think there's something to say, like, there are certain things that a model can never fully give you, right? Like the experience of playing meaningful baseball into late August and in September, that's probably not going to pop up in your analytics model. But it has to mean something, right? And there's no number you can throw on it, but it means something. And if you trade away Foster Griffin, I still think you'll play competitive baseball that matters for maybe a couple more weeks. But are we still talking about this team as a playoff contender into September? I don't know that we are if Foster Griffin is gone. So that's the interesting part of it. I think he lays out exactly what conventional wisdom says. I wouldn't blame Paul Toboni if he goes that direction, although it would be frustrating. Let's get out to Margaret in Great Falls. Margaret, what's going on?
Afternoon.
How are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing fine. I would do this, and I don't have a baseball mind, but I do have a business mind. I would trade Abrams for a young, good, great major league pitcher. This team is totally bat heavy. You've got enough guys in the pipeline that can hit. You've pretty much got nobody who can pitch. First thing I would do is make an offer to Scherzer as an opener and pay him as an opener. He's got many young kids. Offer him land as part of his deal. They'll build a house. Get a pitcher, a young, hot major league pitcher. I don't know enough about pitchers on other teams to know who that is, but for heaven's sake, there has to be someone. That's what Go ahead.
I like that. I appreciate the phone call, Margaret. I like the idea there. I like that you have a clear plan there. I would say the only thing that, even though I like your plan, I think you can still do the C.J. Abrams deal like you're saying in the offseason. Like, this isn't something where you're up against a timeline here, where a deadline here where you've got to make that move. I think that you can still do that in the offseason, and so I don't see the point in upsetting the apple cart at this point. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think that you could trade him in the offseason and get some really good prospects. You could maybe get that young major league arm you're talking about. I mean, Seattle immediately comes to mind with the plethora of arms that they have, but I'm sure there are other organizations that would jump in and be interested in C.J. Abrams and give you a big-time haul. So, yeah, I think that's a astute point that, yeah, go get them, and maybe you go sign some older veteran-type arms to instead of the Miles Michaelises of the world or the Zach Littells of the world, hopefully you feel like at least next season you can find one or two guys that are a little bit more effective than what those guys have been this season, and you're already going to be banking on Cade Cavalli. You're going to be banking on Connolly early. So that's 40% of your rotation. It's about finding that other 60%, and that is something they're going to be tasked with. Maybe there's guys in the minor league system that can step up. Luis Perales is the guy that was acquired in the Jake Bennett deal you heard a caller mention a moment ago that's now in Boston pitching really well. Maybe he could come up at some point at the end of this season, and maybe you feel like he could help you next season in the rotation, but they still do need to figure out pitching, and that I think that's still the big question here is I think they believe that they're going to be able to replicate some of this offense year in, year out, not regardless of the players, but in a way developing the guys into what they do really well offensively. And I still think the big question then is, where does the pitching come from? Where is it coming from? Because they've got young pitchers, they've got guys in the minors, but as the first caller alluded to, Socorro hurts, Susanis hurts, and you generally have to kind of bank on that with young pitchers. So that's the difficult part. 800-636-1067. Let's get out to Michael in Burke. Michael, what's going on?
Hey, how's it going? This is Michael Reed Holly from Burke, Virginia, Fairfax County, where the facts ain't fair. How are we doing today?
Doing great, man.
So I was saying to your producer, would you like to discuss baseball, basketball, football, or pick 'em?
Let's go with baseball.
Baseball. Did Danny do his special play-by-play and color commentary over the weekend, last weekend?
Yeah, he did. I appreciate the phone call, man. Yeah, he did. It was really good. I thought that Danny did a pretty good job. If you missed that broadcast, I have to see if there's a way that you can maybe go back and listen. But yeah, I thought it turned out really good. It was cool to hear some of his insights. It kind of gave you an idea of what I get the privilege of doing when I'm over at Nats Park sitting in the press box chatting with Danny during a game. It was kind of cool. So I'm glad a lot of fans got to enjoy that as well. All right, we got a couple more phone calls we'll get to on the other side of this break. 800-636-1067 if you'd like to hop in. I want to get the more thoughts on what the Nationals are going to do ahead of Monday's deadline. Again, 800-636-1067. Toby Altizer with you till 3 o'clock here on The Fan. Welcome back. Overtime on The Fan. Final couple of minutes, and then you'll get to hear from the legend, DOC Doc Walker. He'll take you up until a Take Command episode that'll lead into Nationals baseball this evening right here on The Fan. Let's get out to the phones one final time to talk about the Nationals before we wrap things up. Fred is in Bristow. Fred, what's going on?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I'll tell you, I don't understand the reasoning behind getting rid of Foster Griffin when we've got, we already have a team that can hit. What we need is pitchers. So why would we want to give away one of our best pitchers to get another pitcher, even if he's younger? It just doesn't make sense to me. And as far as trading some of the younger guys like CJ or Louis, for that matter, I think that would really hurt the chemistry of the team as well as the fan base. I don't want to see them trade away CJ Abrams or Wood, for that matter, or Louis Garcia or any of those guys. I mean, they're the team. They're what's making this team great right now. What we need are pitchers, and getting rid of one pitcher to get another one doesn't make any sense to me. I think they ought to build on what they have and keep what they have and see what can develop as opposed to trading everybody away. That's my thoughts anyway.
No, I appreciate the phone call, Fred. And I'll give you a quick reasoning why they could, you know, move on from Foster Griffin. I understand your points. It's more so about thinking down the line and having control of that player and under contract into 2027, 2028, and maybe even beyond. That's part of why they did the Connolly early deal. Curtis Meade was highly thought of in that clubhouse before he was dealt. I think that was a blow to some of the chemistry in there, but it's also a business. I think the guys understand that. It's not, you know, guys aren't, even though they like being around each other, they also understand how this business works, and that's something that, frankly, I'm glad I don't necessarily have to deal with, and I'm not getting traded to Detroit anytime soon, I don't think. Unless CK's listening, wants to trade me out there to the Detroit State. I don't think that's happening, right? It's got to be an odd thing as a professional to be able to have that happen at any moment. And so that is something that they understand in that clubhouse, and they'll be able to adapt and understand and move past it. So they'll do what's best for the organization in terms of the trade. But I will say, if you're a fan, I can understand Fred's point of, we've got an offense that can compete with anybody in Major League Baseball, as evidenced by the fact that they have 30 more runs than anybody in Major League Baseball. So you have an offense that can compete with any team in any playoff series. You need pitching. Why would you trade the pitching away? But that's focusing solely on the season, and if that's what you want to say you want to focus on, I can understand that, because this season has been a blast. This season has been one that has brought, I think, a lot of Nationals fans back out of hiding, where they're looking at this going, what the heck happened here? I love this. This is fun. And I think, too, I was someone that wanted to make sure I really appreciated what Mike Rizzo did for this organization. I appreciated what Davey Martinez did for this organization. And love both of those guys for bringing us a World Series back to D.C. in 2019. So that's incredibly cool. With the way that the team was operating, I don't know that either one of those guys, unfortunately, were the right man for the job. And this team opted to go with a more analytical approach with their new president of baseball operations and general manager and manager. And so many Nationals fans that are younger, analytically minded, immediately went, yes, this is going to be great. This is going to work. This is exactly what the Nationals should be doing. And I'm fully on board. And I understood that. I also wanted to be a little more patient to say, I got to make sure that this thing works first. I don't want to just dive headfirst in and end up getting burned by it. And what we can definitively say, through 100 plus games, getting into August here, what they're doing this season on the hitting side has worked. Now, there's still questions about the pitching side, but what they're doing on the hitting side is clearly working. And it feels like something that maybe they won't be the top offense in Major League Baseball year in, year out, but this is something that they can build on. This is something that they can feel like they can replicate to an extent on a year-in, year-out basis. Now, they're led by superstars, and so you're going to have to continue to develop superstars if you're not going to sign them long-term. James Wood is a superstar. C.J. Abrams is a superstar. So they are led by two of the best players in Major League Baseball at their positions, and frankly, two of the best hitters, period, in Major League Baseball this season. But they might feel like they can do some of that stuff. And so I think they get a grace period here of letting them make some decisions, because they've shown you that in a year where nobody expected them to do anything, they've been able to create a 500 ball club out of a team that just hadn't been very good the last couple of years. And this is the step, frankly, that we expected the team to take after they won 71 wins back-to-back seasons. This is kind of the step we expected them to make, and instead last year they took a massive step backwards. This is that big step forward, and you hope that you can build this thing going forward. And so if Paul Toboni decides to go, you know what, this year is awesome, I appreciate your efforts to take this thing to that next level and take that step forward. But in reality, this isn't a team that's going to win 90 games. This isn't a team that's going to have a chance to get past the Dodgers or the Brewers or any of the top teams in the National League. So let's start looking at 2027 and put this team in the best position possible to compete for a ring in 2027 and beyond. And maybe they're still even trying to work on building this thing up so that they're a continual winner. I don't know that I could blame him if he makes that move. Personally, I think you've got to weigh it a little bit of the importance and fun of this season while still looking to the future. That's why I'd be prone to move Louis and keep Foster Griffin. That's a move for the future where you're getting in prospects and hopefully a reliever for Louis, but also looking to the present by getting that reliever and also keeping Foster Griffin your best starter and just seeing where this thing goes. Because I think there is such a positive vibe in the clubhouse and such a positive vibe in the fan base that I don't know that I would want to mess that up by potentially trading things away and feeling like you're punting the final couple months of the season to go ahead and look ahead to 2027 and beyond. But that's probably also the correct move by every analytical mind that you could think of and by a traditional process to move off there. So it'll be interesting to see that trade deadline going to come up in 2 days and essentially 3 hours, 6 o'clock on Monday. Paul Toboni and all the general managers around Major League Baseball will have had to made their minds up, and they'll trade deadline will pass, and whatever happens will be in the past, and then it's about pushing forward and trying to make a playoff spot. Hopefully the Nationals can get back in the win column tonight. Game three of the series in Atlanta. Hopefully the Nationals can get back in their winning ways and make that decision for Paul Toboni even that much tougher. They're right there. Hopefully it's not something that they wither in the final couple months. It's been a fun national season. I'd like to see it continue all the way into the end of the season. All right, that's going to do it for me. Appreciate you listening. If you missed anything, you can go check out the podcast. Hit the rewind feature on the Odyssey app if you're listening there. Appreciate you checking it out. It was fun talking about training camp. Always fun talking about the Nats. Hopefully they can get back in the win column tonight. But it's always great to be able to toss the baton or hand the baton to a legend, the DOC Doc Walker. I feel like he's the one always talking me up. I get to talk up a Super Bowl champion. It's not real a difficult task. You just say the guys want a ring here for DC, and that's all you got to say. The DOC, Rick Doc Walker, next here on The Fan.